Hey there, dudes and dudettes, and welcome to Tubular Time Machine, the podcast that cranks the nostalgia dial all the way to 11. I'm your host, Jason Raz Rasmussen, and each week we jump into our gnarly retro ride and rocket back to a specific year between 1971 and 2000, reliving the raddest music, movies, TV shows, video games, toys, slang, and pop culture moments that made growing up in the United States so totally bodacious. But I'm not flying solo. Every episode features a special co-host who is exactly 14 years old that year, ready to dish on everything from mixtapes and mall food courts to butterfly clips and blowing into NES cartridges like a wizard. So grab your slap bracelet, rewind your cassette, and fire up that Tubular Time Machine theme song, where the past is always rad and the vibes never go out of style. Today, I'm joined by someone who's not only brilliant and insightful, but also living proof that the path to success isn't always a straight line. John Boucher. I first met John as one of my education students at Pikes Peak Community College. He stood out right away, thoughtful, curious, and always ready to dive deeper into ideas. But somewhere along the way, John did what many dream of doing. He came to his senses. He shifted gears and found his true calling in information technology, a move that's led him to become a highly respected IT operations manager today. John's got that rare blend of technical genius and natural wit. And even better, he brings an uncannily detailed memory of what it was like to be 14 in 2009. From music to memories to mall culture, he's got the receipts and he's not afraid to use them. Whether he's breaking down pop culture trivia or offering tech-savvy takes, John brings sharp, hilarious, and nostalgic voice to the podcast. I'm lucky to call him a co-host, and you'll be lucky to have him in your ears. Welcome, John.
Hey there. Thanks for having me. I've never done one of these, so this will be a fun experience for me too.
Oh, this one's going to be a great experience for me because the two podcasts I've done so far have been very close to when I was 14, so they were very easy to connect to. But in 2009, it's a little bit different for me because by that time I was older, I was out of the house, I had started a career. So my experiences and your experiences are going to be very different.
I think it'll be fun, though. I mean, you know, it'll be a different time. But ultimately, I think one of the cool things about this is that all the generations, all the years are kind of the same.
Yeah, we all definitely have very similar experiences in certain things, for sure. When you were 14, you had the internet. I didn't, you know, so these are some things to think about. But yeah, our experiences, even though they are very different in regards to certain things, time repeats itself. And you know, it's always about who you hang out with, what you do for fun. And of course, the movies, the TV, and all that different kind of pop culture. In the year 2009, I mean, it was a pretty interesting year, particularly for films and things. And a 14-year-old had a couple of really good ones to go with. Was there any film at the time frame that really stood out to you and kind of drove you and was like, oh, I gotta be there because I'm 14 and I have to see this?
Avatar. I mean, that was the big movie of the year. It was, I think it might be the highest grossing movie ever again. I mean, that was the movie. I remember I had a friend of mine in high school that year who saw it 12 times in theaters. It was the movie. It's what everybody went to see. I remember that it was a movie that, because of the way that it was set up, it wasn't really limited on who could see it. So you could go with your younger siblings, you could go with your parents, and it was pretty safe in that respect. But I do remember it being a literal cultural phenomenon, kind of the last one that I remember up until like Endgame and stuff, where everybody saw it. It didn't matter. You know, you saw it the weekend after it came out and you got to school on Monday and everybody was like, oh my God, do you remember the scene with the, I don't even remember the flying things and all that stuff. So I would say that was definitely the biggest movie at the time. The other big one was it Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, I think, also came out that year. And I remember that was another huge one, at least from my end of things. I'd never paid attention to Twilight, so I didn't care for that one. I knew a lot of people that did. Looking back, there were a lot more movies than I thought that came out that year that were big, especially being around that 14-year-old age, that were definitely geared towards us. But Avatar was the one I distinctly remember everybody losing their minds over.
Yeah, at 14, I think Avatar would have been awesome. I mean, it was so advanced with its capturing, you know, CGI and imagery. And like you said, the flying creatures, which I can't remember the name of either. That was a pretty awesome scene. You know, basically, Avatar was just an updated version of Fern Gully, the Last Rainforest.
Well, and Dances with Wolves, too, right? I think that was kind of the premise it stole from as well. But I think the 3D was really why it was such a mega event.
Well, and see, I came back from Iraq. I worked in Iraq that year, and I came back just in time to get to the last week of viewing of the IMAX 3D. And I remember going into the theater and having that first scene up in space, whatever it was, with the spinning spaceship or in 3D. And it was like, oh my God, you know, I think I'm coming to hurl.
Yep, I do remember that. I remember my mom went to see it with me, and we were going to see it in 3D. I saw it the second time I saw it in theaters with my buddy who saw it 12 times. The first time I did not see it in 3D, and I think that might have actually been a little bit better, just from the standpoint of knowing what was coming and kind of being able to see it made it a little bit easier.
And also the fact that it was a film that, like you said, everyone saw, so everyone knew what was going on. 12 times to me, though, does that, how many hours is that? 3 times 12, you know, 36
like
hours?
That's a whole work week worth of time watching the movie. And you saw that many times in theaters.
Oh, man, that's just, I think I've seen it twice ever, because 3 hours, the 3 hour runtime is just too much for me. But
yeah, I think I've seen it once or twice since then. Just go back and watch it again. It doesn't hold up real well, to be honest.
No, it doesn't. I haven't even watched the second one, to be honest.
I didn't either. Nope. I heard they were coming out. I was like, all right, cool. I have no interest in seeing the second one. So I can't speak on that one, but I can speak on the first one and how insanely popular it was at the time.
Well, and this was the one that Jim Cameron also said that this is going to revolutionize film and 3D is going to be the new thing and all films are going to be 3D. But much like you, I'm very much more about the 2D, because the 3D is just too, I don't know, after a while, it's just a gimmick.
Well, and I think I've always been more of the person who enjoys the story is important, but I like looking at what's on the screen. And my issue with 3D has always been that it's hard to pay attention because there's so much, it's coming across the screen and all these different things. It's just difficult to keep track of. And I think that is what causes movies like that to lose a little bit of their narrative shine, where if you go back later and you rewatch a movie that came out in 3D, they very rarely hold up at all. Not because the narrative's bad, but I think just they relied so heavily on the gimmick that it's hard to watch later.
I would definitely agree with that, because 3D and me, just I'd much prefer the 2D. But the other thing about Avatar, I don't know if you've ever been to Disney World or not, but there's Avatar Flight of Pandora, I think it's called, where you get to ride on the back of one of those things. That ride is freaking awesome.
Well, see, and that sounds cool. And even the Avatar video game that came out, I think last year or 2 years ago, that's actually pretty decent as well. So I think Avatar as an idea does hold up, but I think because he relied so heavily on 3D with the first one, it just, I don't know, it doesn't hold up super well. I heard the second one was decent, though.
I'll watch it eventually, but like I said, 3 hours is just so much to invest in a film that I'm only on.
Yeah, honestly, I'm with you. I'll watch it at some point, but just not anytime soon.
Well, I'm glad we're on the same mindset here. I have the same mindset of a 14-year-old boy from 2009.
You know, that's fair, though. I think that's just part of it.
Yep. Now, you said Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince was the other one that really drove you. Did you read the books before you saw the films?
So I grew up in a Christian household, so I was about 12. My mom started reading them with me. So I had actually gone through them at that point. So when I was allowed to see Half-Blood Prince when it came out. The first one I saw in theaters was Order of the Phoenix. But I do remember getting to see Half-Blood Prince when it came out. So I actually got to experience that part of that phenomenon where previously I hadn't. So it was pretty cool seeing that come to life. It was one of the first movies I distinctly remember ever growing up, but especially 14, that I had read the book before I'd seen the movie. And that hadn't really happened a ton previously, because book adaptations weren't as big of a deal in 2009. They just didn't really do it as much. I think that was still back when they had the mindset, especially like, because, you know, Iron Man had only come out the year prior. So it was still around that time where they were like, well, maybe we can make money off of pop culture narratives written in book or comic book form. But it hadn't taken off like it does now, where if it exists, it's being made into a TV show or a movie. So I do remember it sticking out that was a pretty big deal. And I imagine it was a big deal even for adults, like, oh, they're actually going to finish this series. And granted, that one's one of the worst ones. And I still think it should have been split into two movies, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I would agree. But it had the big reveal, of course, who the Half-Blood Prince was. It was like, you know, but if you read the books, like, you know, like most people did at the time, it wasn't like a big shocker when you were in the theater. But for those that were in there that didn't know, it'd be like, oh my gosh.
And I do remember that part. I think the thing that I distinctly remember, though, is standing in line. That was the one time for a movie that wasn't like a midnight release or something, where even 4, 5, 6 days later, you're still standing in line to see it because every single showing was selling out. And of course, then, yeah, the internet was more prevalent, but it wasn't as seamless as it is now, where I could pull up Tinseltown on my phone and pay for my tickets. You still had to go to the theater. They hadn't quite figured out how to do it yet. You still had to go to the theater to actually pay for your tickets. And back then, you didn't pick your seats. So if you got there too late, you just sat in the very front with your head back, and by the end, you had a crook in your neck. So I remember that was pretty crazy to see, like, almost a week later, people would still be getting in line for the showing so they could get a decent seat.
See, but that's one of the experiences that, you know, thankfully you were able to experience is, I mean, not thankfully, but we actually all had to do that. We all had to go early and get our tickets and then come back early and get in line. And I remember this for many of them, but Phantom Menace being one of the biggest, you know, getting there at 5 a.m. and freezing to get tickets and then having to stand another few hours in line for a decent seat. But I can imagine the same thing, what you're talking about with Harry Potter and Half-Blood Prince, having that front row seat for Avatar. I think you'd basically need chiropractor after that.
Well, and I mean, that goes into things like, I think Modern Warfare 2 came out that year. And I do remember I was allowed to play M games to an extent because I'd worked a deal out with my parents, or as long as it wasn't super gratuitous in any one direction, it was fine. So I remember when Modern Warfare 2 came out, that was one of the first big midnight releases that I'd ever gone to. Because I think Halo 3 was like 2 or 3 years prior. But Modern Warfare 2, I remember getting in line at like 10:30 and there's already 60 people in front of me. and you people would bring board games, and of course this was before the Switch and everything, so you had to bring like tangible stuff. So I remember people brought books and board games and all kinds of different stuff. So I think that was another one that kind of stood out, talking about the whole standing in line because you couldn't do it digitally. Modern Warfare 2 didn't have a digital version, so you had to go to the store. And I remember thinking that was pretty crazy, like going and standing in line at 11 o'clock at night. We also lived like 3 minutes from Citadel Mall at the time. So I just walked there at 11 o'clock at night. And then I walked home because we didn't live very far. So my mom was like, because I had a cell phone. So she's like, just text me when you get there, or call me when you get there. Because texting was back when you had to have minutes. So she was like, call me when you get there. Call me when you get your game, and then let me know when you get home. So I do distinctly remember that being another one of those crazy things, looking back, about standing in line, going, God, we really did just stand in line for random entertainment.
Yeah. And like you said earlier, we all experienced the same things, you know, in these time frames. So it was standing in line for movies. It was standing in line for video games. It was standing in line for concert tickets. Oh, yeah. It was our lives. And then going to Disneyland or Disney World and standing in line.
Well, and I think that's one of those things that I almost miss. And I find myself getting caught up in it, too, is like today was Free Comic Book Day. And a buddy of mine, one of the first comic shops we were going to go to, had a line. And we were both like, we'll come back to it later. Like, we hadn't stood in line most of our high school years. But it was just now it's like, oh, I had to stand in line for 5 or 10 minutes when I used to stand in line for 2 or 3 hours. That's just funny. Like, oh man, we used to stand in line, and now standing in line is kind of this like antiquated annoyance that nobody likes to do.
I keep bringing up Disney World, but I go to Orlando once a year for a charity event. And last time I was by myself because nobody was joining me at the parks. So I did single rider line, which is great because you just go and you're right on, and then you're right on again and right on again. And you're watching everybody else in the line like 80 minutes long. And it's like, no, I don't think I could stand in line for 80 minutes for this ride.
Yeah, I haven't been to one of those places in, gosh, like 20 years, not since I was a kid. So I don't know if I would. I've heard going like around Thanksgiving is the best time because the lines are small. So maybe I'll end up doing it that way. But it's wild to think back, like standing in line was so normal. We just stood in line, and now nobody does that anymore. Like, standing in line? No, I'm really okay.
If I don't get my tickets on my phone in 2 seconds, then it's too much.
Yeah, honestly.
Now, in 2009, there was another film that probably your 14-year-old self might have liked. I love this film, but Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Did you ever see that in the theater?
So I've not in the theater. I think, honestly, by that point, I didn't watch Up. I didn't watch most of the animated kids movies. I think I was dealing with the lovely, angsty teenager of, oh, I'm too old for that. So I didn't see Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs till a couple of years later when I was in the military and they just put it on. And I was like, what the heck is this weird movie? I do remember reading the book as a kid, or my mom reading me the book as a kid. But I didn't actually see that one in theaters. Sometimes I wish I could go back because it seems like it would have been the kind of fun movie to see in theaters.
Yeah, it was a fun one. I enjoyed that one. Now, you said military at the time. So were you overseas when you was?
Oh, no, I was. This was years. I joined the military in 17. So 2012? And then I went to boot camp in 2013. So a couple years later.
Okay, just wondering because I have my fond experiences of seeing movies both in Bosnia and Herzegovina and in Iraq, and having the Star Spangled Banner play beforehand and all having to stand up and then getting the free movie afterwards, and they usually had popcorn and all that.
Well, I mean this is totally off topic, but one of the things I do remember was when I was stationed at 29 Palms in California, they have I don't know if it's still the case. When I was there, it was the case. They had a deal worked out where they would let us see movies a couple of weeks early. I specifically remember the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, the one where they were like the weirdly uncanny valley turtles that all were way too big. I did get to see that early. And they did. It was like a regular movie theater. They just had the one screen, and you just got to go and get popcorn and candy and go and watch. And often we would watch movies that weren't officially released yet. And I think it was just like the way the theaters thanked us for our service was, oh, here, have watched the movie 2 or 3 weeks before it officially releases, which I always thought was cool. That's just one of those experiences I had that I still like, oh, that was pretty fun.
Well, Star Trek from this year, 2009, that's one we got to see in Iraq. So there's an outdoor theater. And you know, you're in the middle of the desert basically, but it's an outdoor theater, so it's a nice little warm wind blowing through, and it's showing on the projection screen outside. That was a fun experience.
Man, Star Trek, that really was 2009. I remember seeing that one with my mom, and she was mad because she's to this day still is a hardcore Trekkie. So I remember we went and saw 2009. We went and saw that movie, and she was grumpy about it because it was too fast. Her favorite was the one with Captain Janeway. What is that one?
Voyager,
that one's always been her favorite. She doesn't discuss the Kirk Picard thing because her favorite's Janeway, but she didn't like that Star Trek. I thought it was cool as a 14-year-old boy. I was like, ah, this is fun with the fast-paced ships, and I really liked the way they did the Romulans and stuff. I like that movie. I still like that one. I know it's a hot take, but I still like that little run they did of Star Trek and then Into Darkness and then beyond. I like those movies. I thought it was fun, but my mom hates the new ones because they're too style over substance ultimately, which I can respect. Doesn't change the fact that the space battles are cool.
I think they're called the Kelvin timeline. Am I correct?
I think so. I respect and enjoy Star Trek. I don't get into it that deep.
Yeah, that one. The big thing about that one was it was directed by J.J. Abrams, if I remember correctly.
So he did his whole camera flash thing, and everybody was so mad.
Yep, lens flares every 2 seconds. You'd be walking down a hall, lens flare, having dinner.
It never bothered me. I've seen lots of J.J. Abrams movies, and it's never bothered me.
Whenever my wife and I watch something that has a lens flare or more than one lens flare, we're like, oh, JJ must have directed this.
Yeah, I don't know. It's never bothered me. I know it's bothered a lot of people, but that one's never bothered me. Didn't the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes come out that same year too?
Yep. That was Robert Downey Jr.'s Sherlock Holmes. Yep, absolutely.
I remember that one. My mom didn't like that one either. I thought it was fun. Again, I liked because it was 14. I liked one of those things I think in that movie that still holds up is the slow-mo where he talks about what he's doing. That's one of those things that even today, I'm like, that's just cool. Like, I know it's a way to show his brilliance in an action scene. And I still think it holds up today where it's just well done.
Yeah, I can still remember the fight scene where he's boxing and he's like trying to imagine the angles and where to hit the guy for the best effect and all that.
That one was, I do remember that being, that was, I still think that's cool. I always was sad it didn't get the third to close the trilogy like they planned. I always wanted them to make the third one.
Yeah, if he's coming back to be Dr. Doom, maybe he'll come back to be Sherlock.
We don't talk about that because you don't want me to go on the tirade of how mad I am about him coming back as Victor Von Doom.
I'm right there with you.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll get back on topic, but the fact that they're once again not understanding how to use probably one of the coolest anti-villains in comic books makes me mad. As in a fully grown adult who now collects comic books, no. I think that, to me, it feels almost like trying to save the sinking ship of the Titanic. They're going, oh God, they're not as popular. We have to bring it back. Like, no.
Yep. No. Marvel's sinking. We need something that we know works. Let's bring RDJ in.
Honestly, just make him, if you want to bring him back and not solely what they did, just make him a variant, which I think is what they're doing with Chris Evans in Doomsday, is making him a variant or something. Do that. Don't give us Dr. Doom and go, oh, it's Doc. No, it's not. And I hate you for this.
Hell yeah, we could go off on modern.
Yeah,
modern
we could just go off on a tangent about how dumb that is. I do know. I think didn't X-Men Origins come out that year? No, I mean, I don't remember.
We don't talk about that. We don't talk about that one.
Yeah, but I think speaking of like comic book movies with terrible decisions.
Oh,
I mean, again, I was a 14-year-old. I thought the movie was cool because back then I wasn't huge. I mean, I was huge into comic books most of my life, but I hadn't really understood Deadpool for fairly obvious reasons, being 14, why I wouldn't understand the character. I liked Wolverine, so I liked getting to dig into his origins. But yeah, looking back, that one wasn't. That was a big, in a series full of misfires. That one, I would say, would be the worst, but Dark Phoenix was the worst. So it's second worst.
I'd say Wolverine is one of the worst movies ever made.
See, I don't know, man. There's some bad ones. That I don't know about I'd put it in my top 10 worst ever, but I think it's the second worst like X-Men movie. I still think Dark Phoenix was worse because it did what X3 did, but actually worse, which I didn't think was even possible. But it did it somehow even worse than X3 did. So
I think my next, I've been introducing my son to films, the classics, the important ones, and we're getting real close to the end of that list. And once we're done with that, I'm going to go back and we're going to watch the X-Men animated series. And then we're going to go through the X-Men films. And
I think like that'll be good.
Well, yeah, but that means that I'll have to see X-Men Origins Wolverine again and my eyes will bleed.
Yeah, honestly, though, like I think, looking back on it now, it's actually not as horrible as I think. Like personally, I made it out to be this really epically bad movie, but I watched it a couple of years ago again and I was like, oh, this movie sucks. It's not great, but I can more respect what they were trying to do with the character, especially knowing what came later and going, okay, you guys were kind of trying to experiment a little bit on how to take his centuries of lore. And the thing I've always appreciated, as a person who loves comic books and has a lot of them now, I appreciated the bone claws because that hadn't really been explored or explained in comic books yet. Is did he always have the adamantium claws, or did he get the claws because he got the skeleton? Or so that I like the first third up until kind of right after the scene with the helicopter where he like digs the claws in the ground and spins the helicopter around, bike around. That's kind of up until about there. I actually don't completely hate the movie. I think it's got some cool things that it did. Of course, the CGI claws are a nightmare, but I do like up to about there. I'm like, okay, this is kind of fun. And then it loses itself in the audience about 2 seconds later with everything after that. But it does have one of the coolest openings of a Marvel movie, of a comic book movie, period, with them going through the decades.
When you do this kind of thing and you have Deadpool, which a character is obviously the merc with a mouth, you know, the person that talks a lot, and you mute him. I mean, that's a big no-no there, but that's like the same thing as Sam Raimi using Venom in Spider-Man 3. You know, it's kind of like he didn't know what to do with him.
He didn't want to put it. I actually met Sam Raimi at a Comic-Con about 2 years ago, and I went to his panel, and he told at the panel he did not intend to put Venom in the movie. It was originally just supposed to be Hobgoblin and Sandman. And Sandman was the big villain, which is why he is the focus of it, because he wanted to explain what happened to Uncle Ben and all of that. The Sony made him put Venom in the movie. That's why it feels so randomly shoehorned. It was never planned. He was not going to do Venom. He doesn't like the character. So that's why that's such a stupid decision, because Sam Raimi didn't want to do it. He like fought them on putting Venom in the movie.
Well, whoever said to mute Deadpool, that writer should be, you know, fired right across the coals. And
it's kind of up there with why are we muting the, okay, cool. We're muting the Merc with the Mouth. That makes sense, I guess.
Maybe he read the script wrong. Maybe he saw it as the Merc with no mouth.
And laser eyes.
Yeah, no joke. Okay, so any other films of this time frame that you're talking about?
I mean, films for a while. Well, movies are a big thing. I love them. I do remember Taken giving me actual, it was, as I said, I grew up Christian, so I didn't realize the dark side of humanity. So I do remember when Taken came out, me and my buddy went and saw it because it was a PG-13 action movie. There was, when that movie came out, because back then they knew how to make trailers. So they didn't, like nowadays, they'll spoil the big reveal. The one I always think of is Terminator Genesis, where they spoil John Connor is a Terminator in the trailer. In 2009, they didn't do that. So you would go into the movie not actually knowing what you were seeing half the time, which was always really fun. So I did not, nor did he, nor did our parents know what the back third of that movie was. So I remember seeing that with him in theaters and going, oh my goodness, is this like a real thing that people struggle with? So that movie kind of shocked me, not in like a violent or gory way, but in a way that like kind of sticks with you, like, oh my goodness, is this a real thing? And it kind of hammered home, especially even at 14, about like, oh man, my parents weren't making up that like I needed to be careful about the types of people that I talked to. So in a good way, that was a good one for me to watch. But I do remember that one kind of scaring me a little bit. Yeah, Taken was a wild one. I was like, oh my goodness, what is this movie? This isn't James Bond. This is, oh, what? Yeah, so that was kind of a wild one.
That's one of the topics that I actually brought up in my current issues course this semester, was trafficking and all of that. So yeah, it ties in and everything. We didn't watch the movie, but we definitely talked about trafficking and being aware.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think that it was a good thing that I saw it in that setting, because they kind of tried to tone it down but still keep it serious. It was a good movie to see, but that one did kind of shock me a little bit. Like, that's crazy.
Well, and that was probably, I would even go to say, that's probably the height of Liam Neeson past Phantom Menace and all that.
To be honest, I didn't watch a lot of TV that came out around that time. I know you sent me a list, and I didn't watch any of them.
Nothing, not even Lost?
I didn't care about Lost. I still don't care about Lost. I've never seen it to this day. I don't care. I just think it was a pointless TV show that ran way too long.
That's it. Podcast over.
Oh, gee, I'm sorry. I know it's fine, but like, I mean, the writers have now come out and said that they didn't know how to end the show either. So I don't know. I'll watch it at some point, but
my wife and I are both fine with the ending. People like say, oh, it's one of the worst endings ever. I was like, no, yeah, not if you kind of put some thought into it kind of thing. It was, you know, there were definitely some highs and lows in the series, but overall as a series.
I think that's true of every TV show, though. I will say my favorite show of all time is on this list, but I hadn't really watched it at that point, which is How I Met Your Mother. I've watched that now all the way through 17 times. It's my all-time favorite show. It's kind of my comfort show. I'll just go and watch it because I don't feel well. I'll throw it on and I can quote like 80% of it. My fiance loves that I can do that. She likes the show. She hates the ending. I've seen it enough times through now to see what they were going for, so I don't hate it as much. But I do remember watching bits and pieces of How I Met Your Mother at that age. The problem was, much like most of the shows on this list, again, growing up in a Christian household, I wasn't really allowed to watch Family Guy or I wasn't really allowed to watch any of it. I did watch Bones, but that was mostly because my mom liked it, because she liked those crime, that kind of show. So I did watch that. I'd watched bits and pieces of The Office. My parents watched a lot of CSI. So I've watched, at the time, I'd watched bits and pieces of stuff. But honestly, mostly I watched things I watched even when then, which would have been my childhood, which was Batman the Animated Series and stuff. But, excellent. I mean, you got to remember, I don't think Netflix existed in 2009. It wasn't the streaming, though. So I think that was kind of where I didn't do as much was TV, because unless you were tuning in every week, you couldn't go back and watch it. YouTube, I think, barely existed.
Yeah, I think it was actually came out in 2009, if I remember correctly.
I think maybe. So.
You said that How I Met Your Mother is one of your comfort shows. I actually have three comfort shows on here that I've seen multiple times. That's one of them being Lost, one of them being The Office until Steve Carell leaves, and one of them being Parks and Rec.
My fiance can't sleep without the TV on, and we often have The Office or Parks and Rec on. I don't hate the last two seasons of The Office, to be honest. I know that's kind of a hot take, but I actually don't hate them. They're not great, but I think as far as TV shows losing their big named star, did okay. There's a couple of good episodes in there that I enjoy watching to this day. I've seen them all the way through now more times because... well, I guess kind of all the way through. She tends to bounce around a little bit. Gotta love that ADHD. So we watch them mostly in order. So I do like looking back, it's honestly more fun looking at them now as an older adult than when I think I can appreciate them better than I would have appreciated them at 14. There is one show on here that I absolutely cannot stand, even to this day, which is The Big Bang Theory. I have watched it all the way through once and I hate it.
Oh, I couldn't get past one episode, let alone a series.
I finished it because you actually taught me this. You can't hate something unless you understand it to its extent. It's like you can't teach on something unless you fully understand it. So I remember that and went, all right, I'm going to finish this show that I can't stand so I can be able to tell people, no, I've watched it all the way through, still hate it.
So you're blaming me for your
viewing. I'm not blaming you, but I am saying that, see, I took what you said and I took that into account and I did finish it. And there's episodes that I think are fine. I always think of the episode where they have to. Well, my issue with Big Bang Theory has always been that it's insulting. I am an autistic nerd. And so I'm what it's making fun of ultimately, and I have an eidetic memory like Sheldon does, because that kind of goes hand in hand with being autistic. Usually, especially I'm on the Asperger's side of the autism spectrum, you often have an eidetic memory just by default. The problem with that is eidetic memories don't work that way. You have to have there, it's a big file cabinet, so you have to have somebody give you input to cause you to be able to go find it. You can't just like blurt stuff out. And the laugh track, I've never been a big fan of shows that use laugh tracks. And I never liked how they treated Raj. That always has bugged me.
Yeah, there's one YouTube video that I watched one time that showed the Big Bang Theory without the laugh track. And it's like
horrifying.
Oh, it is. It's like, why are people laughing at this?
Well, I mean, to its credit, though, it has a few scenes that even to this day, I think are accurate and credible. The big one is them sitting on their laptops, refreshing the page to get San Diego Comic-Con tickets. That's true. Actually done that. That's pretty funny. Another one is my best friend and I, both of us who did Free Comic Book Day, we intermingle collections of comic books. The scene where they're searching through the book saying, have it, need it, and grabbing, that's actually happened to us. So there are scenes that are funny, but overall, I think it's one of the worst shows that's ever been made, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm, yep.
There's very little good about it.
It's a show written for geeks by people that have no idea about geeks.
Correct. And I've not watched Young Sheldon, and I've not watched whatever the new one is that I see getting advertised.
There's another one?
It's about his brother. It's based on, it's a spinoff of Young Sheldon. But no, I have seen it all the way through once. I can't stand it at all. I think it's a terrible, terrible show that actually did more harm than good to nerd culture in general.
I would agree 100%. And like you said, with the ASD and the way that they treat and the way that they make it look like, oh, this is funny because this person's got a challenge in their life. It's like, no. You know, it's just, oh.
Well, and as a person who has autism and is like a nerd, I felt attacked because it almost seemed like they were making light of, like, I love my friends to death. I love my fiance to death. And that show has actually made me question if my friends talk about me like that behind my back. I know that they don't, but you have those moments like, well, this show, Sheldon's impossible to deal with, and I have my moments that are very similar. Do my friends talk about me behind my back like that? Like, do they barely tolerate me? So I think that that actually has done more harm than good to, like, the autism community too, like the neurodivergence, because now we have to question, like, well, do they talk about me like that? Am I that hard to deal with where they would rather go off and watch the movie without me because I have to have certain quirks?
Well, know that in my history here, I've always talked very positively about you. So
you can, I appreciate that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Who's this John guy? Oh, I think I had him as a student once. I'm just kidding.
he was terrible.
I've always talked positively about you.
I appreciate
you.
That. I've talked highly of you too. I'm glad we've been able to maintain a friendship over the years.
I agree. This is one of my favorite things about being a teacher, is being able to connect with old students and see them be successful in life. And obviously you're moving forward and doing well. And
that's I try.
Well, yeah, you are. I mean, you're engaged and you're a nice job and probably a decent income. Not that that matters, but, and obviously you've been pretty successful, which I love to see.
Well, I appreciate that. Really? Yeah. Big Bang Theory is a terrible show and no one should ever watch it.
Agreed. Okay. So if we're on off of TV then.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. We said, I didn't watch much. And then we talked about TV for 15 minutes.
We mostly ragged on Big Bang Theory too, to be fair.
Don't you dare rag on Lost.
Okay. All right, fine. Yeah, we ragged on Lost, and then we both agreedly ragged on the Big Bang Theory because of how terrible it is.
You need to go watch Lost. You recognize season 3 is rough. And then it gets better again.
Wow, so it's not like Heroes where every season but one is terrible.
Yeah, don't bring up that one either. First season, fantastic. Then it went...
I've watched the first season, and I tried to watch the second season and was like, this isn't the same show. I'm good.
Yep.
Never watching it again. Nope.
You tapped out. I at least watched the second season entirely, and what happened?
No, I mean, I remember... I think for me, the big things in 2009 was honestly more video games. Than anything else. Video games and music, I think, were my big ones. I watched a lot of movies, but most of the movies I watched would go with other people, because like we talked about before, the cultural phenomenon thing, where it was a lot of everybody went to see it, so I would go and see it. Because back then I was still I wasn't diagnosed as autistic yet, so I didn't know what I was doing. Now I know, but back then I would be like, all my friends are going to see it, I guess I'll go see it, even if I really didn't care for Avatar or whatever it was. But I do remember particularly 2009 was really where I started to figure out the types of video games that I liked. Obviously talked about Modern Warfare 2, but I think the bigger game for me was Assassin's Creed 2. I remember Borderlands the original came out in 2009. Mm-hmm. Yep. Left 4 Dead 2 I know came out in 2009, and I still play to this day. It's been 16 years. I still play Left 4 Dead 2.
Whenever you had the witches,
Well, and I'll be honest, I've modded mine into Oblivion. I have like laser swords and I've modded that game so much. But I mean, those were big ones. And then I remember, kind of going back to the movies, I took my stepkids and their friends to see the Minecraft movie yesterday. And that was entertaining because it was just, I do all the references. But after the movie, we were talking about, like, my stepkids are aware that I've played Minecraft forever. Particularly my younger stepson is a big fan of Minecraft. So he has it, and we've been playing it and stuff. But he didn't realize I'd been playing it that long. I didn't realize when it came out, which actually when I was, again, with my buddy today, we were talking about Minecraft. And I was like, hey, do you know when Minecraft originally released was May 17th of 2009? And we both started playing it that summer. We didn't realize we'd been playing it as long as we've been playing. That was kind of the moment where we were both like, oh man, 2009 was a long time ago, because it was just like, we remember sitting down at our potato laptops playing. Well, because that's what we would have had. That's what we had in 2009 was, I think I had some old Dell laptop that my dad got when he was in his master's program or something. Like, I did not have a good computer back then, because unlike now, for the younger people, computers, you would have one, okay, maybe two by this point. You might have your big family PC, and then you have a laptop. but the laptop and the desktop aren't going to be top of the line. They just exist. So I think that's what led to at least Minecraft's extreme popularity for my generation, is it was easy to play.
Yeah, and it didn't take a lot of memory or power to run in the initial stages.
Especially because I think it was limited to like 1,200 chunks at the time that you could render at one time. So it wasn't like it is now, where it scales up to the power of the computer. So it could only render so much. So on a potato, you could still actually comfortably play the game. But Minecraft was huge. It got a movie. Modern Warfare 2 was massive. Assassin's Creed was a big deal, but not as big of a deal. And then I remember when Batman came out.
Oh yeah.
And for me, that was game changing. Because like I've said, I was a big comic book guy. Still am a big comic book guy. Get to run around as Batman.
Well, and it was a great story too.
Oh yeah. I mean, Arkham City was better, but Arkham Asylum was kind of where it all started. And bringing back Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill, being a Batman the Animated Series kid, was pretty awesome.
Yeah, my son and I have gone through the Batman the Animated Series, and most of the way through Batman Beyond. We still have some episodes.
Batman Beyond is my all-time favorite, followed very closely by Batman the Animated Series. They're still two of my all-time favorite TV shows.
Well, you got fantastic taste, because they're both awesome.
Well, and I met Kevin Conroy before he died, and that was really fun. So that was Batman coming out was a pretty big deal, because they brought the old band back together, and that game was just genuinely super good anyway.
And that's nice that you get to meet Kevin Conroy. That's one of my wishes. You know, I do have met him at a con, but I never got the chance.
He was really, really nice. I'll tell the story real quick of when I met him. But when I met him, my dad got in trouble with my mom, but growing up, he got me, back in like 2002, they did a monthly VHS delivery to your house of Batman the Animated Series. So he did that for me for like it was like a year or something. So I have basically the whole series on VHS. I still have them. And then it was, I don't know, 2017, 2018, maybe 19. He came to Denver for Comic-Con, and I took partners. That one was the one with like Batman and Robin and all that. I took it with me and I took it up to Denver. And when I got in line to meet him and I got up there, he was so excited to see a VHS copy of Batman the Animated Series. He spent like 5 minutes just talking to me about, why did I bring a VHS? Because he was so excited. He's like, I haven't seen a VHS from someone to sign in almost 10 years at that point. He's like, I haven't seen one. People bring pop figures, they bring posters, they bring the DVDs and the Blu-rays, but nobody owns VHS anymore. So he was genuinely like, this is so cool to see somebody who's bringing me a VHS of that show. So that was a pretty cool interaction, him being super excited to like sign it. And we chatted about, he gave me some backstory on how he came up with aspects of the character, and it was just a fun time. So he was pretty cool to meet. I had a lot of fun with that. So I think that kind of always made those shows a little extra big, because of just like getting to meet him, and all of that was pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm jealous. There are certain ones that I would have loved to have met. I was supposed to have met Stan Lee at the Denver Comic-Con.
It was cool.
Well, my wife got online and got me the tickets. So like she jammed on that and stuff, got me the tickets. And then he had to cancel out, because I think he had a cameo in a Marvel film. And so Shatner that came in, I mean, that was still cool, but I would have loved to have met Stan Lee.
He was super fun. He was really old when I met him, but he was just pleasant, quiet, surprisingly quiet, just hung out with us and went about his day. But he was pretty cool. That one was pretty fun.
Nice. That's a good thing. You got that memory too. Now going back to video games real quick, for me, the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, I ran a gaming server of Modern Warfare for, you know, a couple of years at least. And we had a good group of people. It was a family friendly one. So we had no swearing, no bullying. So we'd boot people if they were doing that.
Modern Warfare 2 was Rust.
I
remember, because 1v1 me became what we would say out of playing COD. We would be like settling disputes, and you hear 1v1 me, bro, which I know still exists, but for those people who don't know, that's where it started, was Modern Warfare 2 because of Rust. That's where 1v1 me came from, was 1v1me, bro. Was you would go and you would settle like knives only or snipers only or whatever, and you would settle your disputes. And I remember doing this. A couple of my really good friends, we used to, when we would get in arguments, we would stop the, we would look at each other and say, "All right, we're not agreeing. We're 1v1ing Rust when we get home." And we would get home and we would 1v1 each other in Rust, and that's how we settle disputes.
That's awesome. I didn't realize that.
Oh yeah, Rust was Nuketown before Nuketown. And I still, that map still annoys me because I still know the glitches to like get on the top and then be really basically unhittable with anything up there. And I had a build in that game where I had the intervention with Blue Tiger and the thermal scope. And then on my back, I wore the lock-on rocket launcher. So I could kill people, then they would try to call in like a chopper gunner to take me down and I would blow everything up. I still remember doing that. So I was not exactly a not toxic person in online in Modern Warfare 2.
I think at the time I was probably still running the COD4 server. So COD2, Modern Warfare 2 was still fun and we still played it like crazy, but we kind of leaned back toward Modern Warfare.
Modern Warfare, Call of Duty 4 was just a good game.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic.
There's no workaround. It was a great game.
See, and I played Batman Arkham Asylum. I played all the Batman games. So I wanted to go back and actually play it through the entire series, but one of the games is under the upper level PlayStation tiers, whatever.
Origins, I think it is.
Yeah, I didn't want to pay the extra money for that. And so I'm like, I'll wait and see if it ever comes out.
Bought them all. I have them all on PC. So I was starting to play through them with my stepson. So I have them all on PlayStation again. And we've been slowly going through them. He's been enjoying them. So, I mean, I remember doing all that too. It was kind of crazy.
I played through all of the Uncharteds. I just did a whole run through again fairly recently. Love the Uncharted games.
Those games are awesome.
Yeah, it's a movie in a game, you know?
Oh, yeah.
We know Nathan Fillion should have been, you know, Nathan Drake, but no.
But I think by the time they actually got their heads out of their butts and made the movie, he was too old.
Nah, it doesn't matter.
Okay, there's a level of like it kind of matters. By the time they made the movie, Nathan Fillion was Sully's age in the Uncharted game.
He's Nathan Drake, darn it.
Nathan Drake is Nolan North. That's true.
I will.
Nathan Drake is Nolan North. Okay, that's who it is.
Absolutely. I agree with you there. I played Borderlands like, you know, back then. I still play Borderlands, looking forward to the fourth one.
That was another one of those games I played with some friends in high school, and that was a good time running around, and that was kind of the first game where we got like, it's kind of where looter shooters came from, even though like Destiny's the big one. I've always thought Borderlands is kind of where that started, because you had to kill things to get new loot to make yourself better.
But then when you got your particular weapon, because I was always good with sniper weapons for sure. And so when you got the one sniper weapon that was looks great, you just stuck with it the rest of the game pretty much.
You know, it sucked.
Yeah. And then there's Left 4 Dead 2 I played like crazy. The witches and the bloaters. And
that was such a great game. I was always sad we didn't. What is it? Okay, real quick. What is it with Valve and 3s? We never got Left 4 Dead 3. We never got Portal 3. We never got Half-Life 3. They don't make third games, and I don't understand why.
Yeah, it's a good point. I never thought about that before, but yeah, maybe we'll eventually get Portal 3. No.
No, we're not going to get Portal 3. We're not going to get Left 4 Dead 3. We're not going to get any. There's just at this point, just let it die. We're never going to get them, and that's okay.
Did you ever go to the arcade when you were this age?
Honestly, a little bit, mostly with my dad, mostly playing like older games like Pac-Man and stuff. I know like they brought back Street Fighter and stuff about then. I think the only one that I remember, I don't even know if it was 2009 or earlier or later, but I do remember the Terminator, the big one with the big guns, was really cool. I don't know when that one came out, but that one I remember going up to up there on InterQuest, that arcade up there, they had it. We would go there and we would play it. I do remember doing that, but I don't remember when that came out. That one was cool.
Terminator Salvation.
Yeah,
late 2009.
Oh, okay, well then there you go. Yeah, I remember I played that a fair bit. That was always fun. We never beat it, because that's the thing about those, they made them impossible so that you had to pay more money. We never beat it, but it's pretty fun though. So that would have been most of my arcade going, was going up to like that place and doing laser tag and all of that.
I think arcades were kind of on the way out. I wasn't an arcade person in 2009.
My dad's always been a big arcade guy. So we definitely went and played some.
So you were a comic book guy. I know that much now based on our conversation so far. Yep. There were some pretty big titles in 2009.
So I didn't, okay, at that point, because it wasn't really growing up at that point, I didn't really have the money to do that. Most of it I've ended up coming back to later. I know the Hellboy the Wild Hunt came out, and that was a pretty big deal for the 2019 Hellboy movie, and I have that whole run. My buddy, who I've mentioned a couple of times, is a big Green Lantern fan, so he collected Blackest Night, and I do know those two came out around that. And obviously The Walking Dead was prevalent, and I still don't collect The Walking Dead. I think it's fine, but I've never been a huge oh God, what's his name? The guy who created, I've never been a huge fan of his stuff anyway. So, I mean, I've definitely collected things, but that's all coming back, getting older and doing what all of us adults do and going back and buying the stuff he couldn't buy as kids.
Yeah, no joke. That's what everything is these days. And they actually saw an article in the news about that the other day about people are older people are now buying their toys and things.
We don't need to talk about that. Don't ever look in my office at my house. It's a comic book store at this point. I have so much stuff. I did the big thing I bought recently was the Batman the Animated Series Lego, the Gotham City Lego set. I have that. And then I went overkill and like bought the fancy lights so I can turn it on and the lights up and all kinds of stuff. So yeah, big going back and buying all the crap from when I was a kid that I couldn't buy for one reason or another. But I mean, I've collected a lot of those time periods comics now, the big ones being, like I said, the Hellboy the Wild Hunts, and then my buddy has, I think, most, if not all, of Robert Kirkman was The Walking
Yes,
Dead.
I was going to bring that up, but I was
I
letting
was like,
you.
damn it, what's his name? But my buddy's got the Blackest Nights. He's a pretty big fan of that run.
Yeah, that was a lot of comics for Blackest Night.
I think it's like 182. And then if you get real stupid and you get Brightest Day came right after. And the problem with that is Blackest Night and Brightest Day, particularly, I think it's Brightest Day, which I think was 2010. That's where Batman gets the lantern ring, and that's where Kyle Rayner becomes the first White Lantern. Because that's so they did the Blackest Night where they all die by the Black Lanterns, and then they did Brightest Day where Kyle Rayner gets every lantern ring and becomes the White Lanterns, and then guys like Batman and stuff get rings. Both of those are in there as well. So it's actually not even a super cheap run because it's the first appearance of like the Black Lanterns, and then you have that those kinds of things. So it's a very large and expensive run.
I can understand that. I mean, like I said, Blackest Night alone is just so many. It's
Oh, insane.
one of those ones you have to look online. Which one do I read next? And then there's this one, there's that one.
I have a couple of those runs myself that I've been collecting, and I've had to do that multitude of times. And I actually have those in like the app that I use to keep track of my comic book collection. And half the time, because I did it so long ago, I'll be like, "Why is this book in there?" And then I go back and look and be like, "Oh, that's why." Okay,
There's
because
one
it's just like.
frame that's mentioned.
And I'm a overkill. I'll collect anything tied to the run that I'm collecting. So if it's mentioned like, hey, see next week in Iron Man number 52, and they're talking about whatever it is, I'll get that book just to say I have it. So I definitely have a few of those. I'm like, what the heck is this? This isn't tied to anything. And then I go back and look and be like, oh, that's right. It's tied to one frame at the end of the book. Damn it.
That's like us. We just watched the season finale or series finale of Mythic Quest again because they said they changed it because they now the series is canceled. So we watched the whole thing and it was like 20 seconds at the end of the episode that they changed. I'm like, what the?
You know, it's what you do. Oh, and Dark Avengers was 2009. And that's another one that I'm going back and collecting now, actually. I've got bits and pieces of that one.
My big one from this time frame, I mean, I'm a big fan of Kirkman and The Walking Dead and also Invincible. I haven't read the Invincible comics. I need to, but The
Good
Walking
luck.
Dead,
They're hard to track down.
the reason I can't watch the TV series past like season three is it because the comic book is so far superior and the TV series like just destroys some characters and it's like, oh, come on, you just made this character a wuss or you made this character not nearly as cool as they were in the comic
I
book.
think the only thing I like better about the show, and I stopped watching The Walking Dead because I think it got too long in the teeth, but I like that they didn't take Rick's hand away. They actually keep it, because even Robert came out and said he wished he hadn't done that. So I like seeing that, like, they kind of fixed that and went, you know what, never mind, that was a terrible idea.
I think I quit when the governor was after the governor's season, because the governor is just such a weaker character. I'm just like, they didn't play him right, so I didn't even get to Negan or anything like that.
Negan's pretty great. I like Negan in the comics. Like, Walking Dead was pretty good. I think my issue is not with Robert Kirkman specifically, but the fact that, like, he's the one that everybody thinks of, like, made all these cool comic book things. And I'm out here like, you guys realize how many cool comic book different runs there are, and you focus on this one guy. Granted, yeah, he made Invincible, and he made Oblivion Song, and he made Walking Dead, and he did some great runs, but, like, there are other people who made really cool stuff, and you're focused on this one guy. So I think I'm more annoyed at Hollywood than I am at the actual guy.
Understood. Yeah, justifiable too. And that's like, people give credit to Tim Burton for making Nightmare Before Christmas. It's like, dude, he had, like, almost nothing to do with the film aside putting
his name
on it.
He got on board to help make it popular because he believed in it, but yeah, he was not really involved.
Yeah, he didn't direct it. He kind of saw it as a side thing that, you know, he wasn't interested in at first until he saw how cool it was and stuff. And yeah, so it's always like, oh, come on, you know, give credit where credit's due. Give the director an actual, you know, props, as opposed to Tim Burton, who is like, let's put my name on it.
I think that's kind of always been my thing with Robert Kirkman, is great, cool, yet another Robert Kirkman thing. And, like, I like Invincible, so I'm not sitting here saying it sucks, but it's just, really, you're just going to focus on freaking him.
Once again, we could talk comics all day. We didn't even mention Chew, for example, but Chew is an interesting one from 2009. But if you've never heard that one, I recommend that.
I haven't. I'll have to check it out.
It's unusual. And so then, if we're going past that, any toys that you played with? It doesn't really look like there were that many great toys. And
I mean,
and
Nerf.
Nerf, yeah.
But Nerf's been around forever. Nerf was always awesome. Yeah, I think for me, I never, even to this day, I don't have very many toys. I think it goes back to the whole autism thing. I don't play with them. I put them on the shelf because they're cool, and I just, like, leave them there, and they hang out here. And
I think by 2009, too, toys weren't what they were back when I was
young. No,
had video games, you know, you had, you know, Call of Duty, and so you could get in your screen and things, but, you know, toys were kind of the dying trend by then.
No, absolutely. It's just always been kind of, it's there. I mean, I have, like, looking around, I have some toys. I got some Legos, and I got all kinds of different stuff, but, I mean, even still, I mostly put them on a shelf and look at them because they're cool. I don't play with them in the traditional sense. I've never, even as a kid, I was never a big toy guy. I like things you can play with, like board games, and I like building with Legos. So yeah, I think Nerf would have been really the only thing I played with back then, would have been Nerf guns, just because everybody played with Nerf guns because it was cool.
I think Nerf and Lego are kind of like the two that really just live through time, kind of thing.
Well, I was gonna say, I think that they've done something that toy brands have been trying to do forever, which has become so synonymous that every age group, every generation knows it. Like, you and I could sit here and talk about Lego for 2.5 hours because Lego is the same thing with Nerf. It doesn't change.
Okay, well then, toys, we got Nerf, and then there's a couple of fun commercials from 2009.
Oh, and I don't want to talk about the commercials, like the I'm a Mac and I'm a PC, and there's the, did the Most Interesting Man of the Year, was he around then, or did that come a couple years later? Because I know that one was ridiculous. There's the I mean, there's so many dumb ones that I still remember.
It's on here. Most Interesting Man in the World. Dos Equis came out.
That was then. Okay, I remember that one. I remember the I'm a Mac and I'm a PC. I remember that one.
Judge John Hodgman.
Yep. There were so many dumb ones that had come out that year that I do distinctly remember. I think that's also when the You're Not You When You're Hungry Snickers, that they still run, which is crazy. Yep. That's when that whole phenomenon started, which is still insane. Isn't that also the year where we got the first term for app? With Apple's, like, there's an app for that thing, because that was about when smartphones were sort of starting to take off, I think.
Yeah, iPhone 3GS was out that time frame.
I do remember those ads. Those are kind of the only ones that I remember like coming up on TV, because back then we didn't have streaming. So you kind of had to watch the ads. And those are the ones that I remember coming on when I was a kid, were those. I mean, there was probably more, but those are the only ones that I distinctly remember. There was the freecreditreport.com jingle, which at the time I didn't understand what a credit report was, but I remember the jingle. Those I remember. Those were good commercials. Commercials now, I think, I don't know. I don't really watch regular TV.
No, I don't think, I always pay the extra to make sure I don't have any ads and stuff.
Yep. I'm with you there, man. Or I just go back and watch old shows, because there just isn't as much on nowadays that interests me.
I very much remember the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC commercials for sure. Because like I said, that was John Hodgman and Justin Long. Yeah. Yep. And Justin Long went off after that to help with Seth Green with Robot Chicken.
Yep. And looking back, that ad has not aged really well. Yeah,
no joke. That's like having a Gateway 2000 ad these days.
Yeah, like nowadays, PC is superior in every possible banner, in my opinion, to a Mac.
But that's a Mac convert.
Nope, I can't stand Mac. I can't stand Apple. That's a conversation you and I can have another day. But I'm still to this day, not an Apple fan. I think that it doesn't, to everyday users, doesn't provide enough that a PC can't do. Now, to certain professionals like musicians or photographers, that's a different conversation. But for like everyday users, I just don't think it does anything that the PC can't do.
This one we'll agree to disagree on for now. That's like you said, an argument for later.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And my only thing on that is that I was a PC person for many, 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 many years. And then I got a job over in District 49 and they gave you MacBooks there. And then by the end of the school year, I had learned to love the functionality of it. So that's why I've transferred over to Mac. But I'm Android on my phone and my watch and all that kind of stuff. So anywho, other things for this time frame, 2009, some slang that was around.
I still use some of this slang. Okay, I still use epic and legit.
Legit.
That's what she said is just funny. And I know that came from The Office. And I said it back then. I say it now because it's hilarious. Looking back, look, it's kind of funny how much of it is just in the standard vernacular now, because I do like actively use, obviously most of it I don't use because it was cringe then.
Yeah. Some of this has gone into the actual dictionary, like bromance, I think.
Do use that one. I think that's the one that has always been interesting to me because it's an apt description. Like, you know, you have the bromance with somebody.
Yep. It's really more so with the reality TV more than anything else these days.
I mean, like Steve and Garrett have a bromance in the Minecraft movie. And I think that bromance is one of those that I forgot was my generation's term because it's so common.
Yep. I'm looking at the list of words.
YOLO. I'm looking through it too. And I'm like, man, a lot of these we started. What? They're just terms. I didn't know these were okay.
Definitely still around.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Epic fail,
I still use epic fail, unfortunately. Cray cray. That one I thankfully died out.
I agree with you. These are definitely, I have my list here of fail, epic, bromance, swag. I use swag differently though. People use it as like, you know, having swag or swagger. I use it as some wild ass guess.
No, that's fair. But it's just, it's crazy to me to think like there is so much of that actually has stuck around.
Okay, so moving on then.
Yeah.
We have fads of the time.
So here's the thing about fads and celebrities and stuff. I'm not a good person to talk to because like we've established, I'm autistic. Don't care about fads. I still to this day do not care about celebrities at all. Yeah. I don't care what they're doing. I have very little to add to those two. I mean, flash mobs were a thing and I thought they were stupid when I was 14. A bunch of people, but then again, I hated being in large groups of people and I don't like dancing. So it would make sense why I'm not a fan of flash mobs. And I just thought, like, really, the ones that I thought were real stupid were the flash mob proposals.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. So, yeah, unfortunately, on fads and celebrities, I have very, very little to offer because I don't care.
Yeah, I'm mostly with you. I don't really care about celebrity, you know, so much. I follow a few here and there.
I have what I call my taco list, and it's celebrities I want to hang out, eat tacos with. Like, yeah. Jack Black's on that list. I just want to hang out with him. Like, not because because they're celebrity, that's how I know them, but also, like, it would just be cool. Like, let's sit down, let's eat some tacos, teach me, let's just chat. So that's kind of where the extent of my celebrityness is, mostly people that I would just hang out with to hang out with. And
I'm the same way. That's how my Instagram, I don't follow many celebrities on Instagram, but like you said, the same ones, I guess the taco list for me, like Ron Perlman,
Steve. Exactly.
Mark Hamill, Nolan North.
Those guys are the people, just hang out with them. Like, I just want to hang out. And I call it the taco list because who doesn't like tacos? Everybody likes tacos. So let's just go, let's hang out and get some tacos. That's always kind of been like my thing is if I'm going to hang out with a celebrity, I want to hang out with somebody who offers me something. Like, I met Sam Raimi and he's on my taco list because he's so cerebral. It would be cool to pick his brain. Yeah. I'm also a massive, and I know you are too, huge Evil Dead fan.
Oh, yeah.
So I would love to hang out with him just to learn about how he made the first movie.
Yeah, I try to watch all the Evil Deads, even including the remake and the
I like all five.
I like to watch them like once a year typically.
Oh, yeah. All five. In my opinion, there isn't a bad Evil Dead movie.
I just introduced my son to Army of Darkness since I thought
Lauren has it. My fiance seen Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness.
Okay.
We haven't. Oh, and Evil Dead Rise, because for a while we were doing Oh My Horrors, 52 Weeks of Horror, and for body horror we watched Evil Dead Rise. So nice. She's seen three of the five at this point. But Evil Dead is one of my top three horror franchises.
I did a whole Sam Raimi marathon of everything he's directed, probably about 2 or 3 years ago. And there's some good stuff in there, and there's some stuff in there. It's like,
yeah, he's got some out there odd stuff, and then he's just got some amazing things. You're like, oh my God, this is so good. But yeah, so I am not helpful with celebrities, and I'm not helpful with fads because I've never cared. I still don't care. Couldn't tell you who's married to who, or my fiance catches me up on the drama because she pays attention, and I'm over here like, yeah, I mean, okay. I know nothing. Now I got literally nothing for you as far as that goes. Now, fashion, be honest, my fashion hasn't changed much since 2009. I mean, obviously I'm bigger physically, so I don't wear skinny jeans anymore. I also don't wear bootcut jeans. I still wear more like the slim straight style jeans. I do wear leather jackets. Most of my t-shirts are graphic tees, like band t-shirts. I wear a flannel shirt every day to work. So like the fashion trends is what we could have a conversation about. Cause looking through the list, they're like, oh my goodness, I still wear most of, oh my God, I still wear most of this. Great.
Neon accessories, huh?
No, see, that's right down the line. I didn't wear neon accessories. That the big thing for me is that's something that's not listed on here is that was when emo was a thing. Big time. That's a whole subject that we'll definitely have to get into, but the skinny jeans and the bracelets and the long hair, that was where, like, I definitely leaned. Granted, I went to onto the Classical Academy, so I couldn't really wear whatever I wanted, but that was definitely, we can definitely get into that, because Hot Topic and Spencer's and all that was where I was at for sure.
My mom mentions you every once in a while.
Your mom does?
Because you were the TCA at the time.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
That's definitely where like I did some damage, is that so kind of era.
The Hot Topic Spencer's person.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's just the thing. Like I was saying, like my style is pretty much still the same. I do still shop at Hot Topic and Spencer's. A big thing now, I wear flannel shirts, but one of the biggest differences now, because I've different conversation, but I've acknowledged my apparent love for creepy and horror most of my life that I didn't know I had. So I have a lot of, especially Spirit Halloween does it, Hot Topic does too, and Spencer's, they'll make like flannel shirts that have, like I have a Trick or Treat one, I have a Nightmare on Elm Street one, And then I think I have another one, but that's kind of become more of my thing and I mean, I imagine it's for you too. You find your style, and maybe it's an autism thing, but you find your style. You're like, this is it. This is what I'm going to wear. And I still roll with it, man. I've looked at pictures from when I was in high school and like, oh yep. I still kind of dress that way. Okay.
I think mine has changed. I was with you on the graphic tees for a long time. I mean, I had everything I had for the off days was graphic tees of different movies or TV shows or comic books or whatever. But now I've changed over to the most bright, obnoxious shirts you can possibly find.
I see your post on Facebook, and I can't help but laugh. my thing now is concerts. My fiance and I go to a lot of concerts. I think this year we have 10, and one's in DC and one's in Vegas. We go to a lot of concerts. So most of my t-shirts are band shirts. Like when we go to a concert, we buy a t-shirt. So most of my graphic tees are from music that I go see. Or like today I'm actually wearing my Batman the Animated Series t-shirt. So that's a lot of like I have a lot of horror shirts. That's kind of where it lines is bands, video games, comic books, and then horror is most of my clothes. But I definitely wear on the maybe, I don't want to say skinny jeans, because I would look like an idiot if I wore them now, but definitely not your traditional boot cut. I still wear more of that athletic or slimmer style jean.
I've actually got a take mine down a couple sizes, but that's just because I lost some weight. But I'm just I prefer jeans, but you have to wear slacks to work and all that.
And that's why I love working in IT, because my style has definitely going to work, I try to I guess professionalize it up a little bit. I mean, my hair is 22 inches long, so I can only professionalize it so much. And until about 6 months ago, it was brightly colored. I'd been dyeing my hair for almost 5 years. Now it's brown. It's back to my natural brown. And that's a lot because of the new role that I have with being the operations manager. I was like, all right, I'm not going to cut it off, but I guess I'll dye it back to brown. I do try to dress a little more professional, but one of the things I love about being in IT is I wear jeans every day.
Yep. I did that one. I did that career for 13 years. And so, or no, 16 years. And so, yeah, I'm definitely with you on that.
So that is one of the things I love, is that I don't have to be a corporate stooge. I don't have to wear a suit and tie every day. I wear jeans and a plaid shirt and no one cares. Yep. And I'm good at my job. So that has been really nice. But I mean, a lot of these like shops I never shopped in. I didn't go to Abercrombie & Fitch, didn't go to Hollister. I think I got my jeans at American Eagle back then, but mostly I went to Hot Topic.
You didn't go into Claire's and get your ears pierced?
I still don't have my ears pierced, man. The only thing I did when I got older was get tattoos. I do have those, but I did not get my ears pierced. The only funny thing about Aeropostale is, and I can see it, it's still in my closet. In 2010, so the next year, a buddy of mine bought me a Aeropostale cable knit white sweater. And I still have it, and it still hasn't fallen apart, because that was when they actually made like decent quality stuff. It doesn't fit me anymore, but I just keep it because it's surprising to me that like it's still around. I wore it consistently every winter for probably 10 years.
Jeez. Yeah. That's me. I always tell my kids I have underwear that are older than them.
I hope not. Mine is just that thing about clothes, man, is I think again, maybe it's an autism thing, but I found what I like and I'm just gonna roll with that. That's what I wear. And I definitely have been in Hot Topic, and I own some stuff from there just because they have cool stuff. And same thing with Spencer's, especially now they've definitely Spencer's. If you're a horror person, Spencer's is the place to go if you're looking for shirts and stuff, because I don't know if you know this, but Spirit Halloween is actually owned by Spencer's. So they sell throughout the year some of the stuff that you can get at Spirit Halloween. So that was a tidbit I learned this year, or last year, I guess. That was pretty cool.
I did not know that. One of the things I've always said is that if I get on my reality show, and when I win the reality show and I take all my money, that I'm going to get a sleeve of like Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees and
I have Michael Myers tattooed on my arm. I'm the worst person to ask about should you get a horror tattoo. I have it literally is tattooed on my arm. I'm going to do a half sleeve of horror characters that I like. So I'd say do it, but that's just me.
I plan on it one day. When I win my reality show, I'll definitely go and do that route.
You've been saying that forever, man.
dude. I almost got on one of them this season. Almost. I'm still working it right now.
I would watch. I don't watch reality shows, but I know you're. I know you're big into them. I'm just not a.
So we've covered fashion. We've covered shopping mall stores and stuff. Now we're getting down to the nitty gritty. The last part, kind of normally where I just do a quick review of some of the big headlines of the year. Just because it's so easy to dig into the big headlines, but these are the smaller parts of pop culture that really don't necessarily define you, but are important things nonetheless. So 2009 had some big news stories. You had the first run of President Obama in 2009.
Yeah, I got nothing for that. I was 14. I didn't really pay attention.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, he was the president. I remember it was a really big deal because he was the first black president, which was this. And I've never been a huge person on race anyway, so I didn't understand why it was a big deal. I'm like, okay, cool. If he got elected, then that means he was a good fit for the job, which, you know, now I'm an adult. I'm like, yeah, it's not always the case, but sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it was a huge, big deal. I remember my mom talking about the fact that, like, that happened. But, yeah, I mean, I remember it was a pretty big cultural deal. Like, oh, we elected our first black president, and then he got reelected, and that was a pretty massive deal. So, yeah, I know it was a – but you know. This is, you probably know better from the perspective than I do.
That's kind of like me and Jimmy Carter, because Jimmy Carter is one of the first presidents I remember. But only reason I remember it, same thing as you, is my parents talked about it mostly.
Michael Jackson died that year, didn't he?
Yep, Michael Jackson died, yeah.
With his dad was upset. I've never been a pop fan, even to this day. Then, never been a pop fan, didn't care. My dad was like, oh, that's so sad, like Michael Jackson died. I think the big thing about Michael Jackson for me was that it was my first ever experience with how people react when celebrities die. Because prior to that, I still, even then, didn't really pay attention. But that one is the one I remember because it was such a big deal. And I was like, okay, cool.
I can't really think of too many celebrities that made me go, oh, like not sad, like cry, but like upset. I think the first one I can really remember might have been right around this timeline. I can't remember exactly, with Chris Farley when he passed.
For me, it's Kevin Conroy and Stan Lee. Those are the only two celebrities, especially Stan Lee. Those are the only two celebrities that I was like, well, I am genuinely upset. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Those were formidable years, like we talked about with Kevin Conroy earlier. Like, that's a big deal for me was when he died. But Stan Lee, because he created so many of the characters that I love, that like those two were really the only celebrities that have ever died that I've been like, oh, this is actually crap. I don't like this. So yeah. It has not happened often for me.
Yeah, for me, like I said, Chris Farley was a big one because I loved Chris Farley. I still do. He had his struggles, obviously. But yeah, there's not that been that too many celebrities where it's like, you know.
Yep. Nope. I've got two. And I mean, Alan Rickman wasn't fun, but it didn't hit me as hard as it hit other people. But I would say those two for sure are definitely the ones that were like, holy crap, this is actually pretty terrible.
So let's see, biggest events of the year was the Obama, Michael Jackson, Avatar premiere. What else here? That's really about the big stuff in the news. I mean, there's other stuff, of course, but as a 14-year-old, probably didn't pay too much attention to it.
Yeah, for me, not a lot happened in that year that I paid much attention to. I know that I think that was the year that like Kanye did whatever he did to Taylor Swift, which to this day, I still don't really know what he did. I just think that was the VMAs that year.
That was one that happened that year. Of course, here in Colorado, we had a big one with the Balloon Boy, you know, the hoax.
Balloon Boy. I do remember that.
That was one of our claims to fame here in Colorado.
Oh, yeah. You know. But I mean, there wasn't that much I remember as far as celebrity goes. I'm not a great person for that side of pop culture. You want me to talk about music and stuff? I'm good for that. You want me to talk about celebrities? They are people who exist. That's what I got. I always make the argument that all celebrities, especially like actors, are getting paid to LARP. There is no difference between the guy dressing up as a ranger and going to Ren Faire and an actor. They're exactly the same. One just gets paid an exorbitant amount of money to do it.
I like that frame of thought.
So they're just regular people to me. That's how it's always been. I've met a lot of them from going to Comic Cons, and I'm like, yeah, this is cool, and it's always fun to meet them. But I definitely just treat them like regular people.
So John, I think we've come to the end of some of our big stuff. Was there anything about being a 14-year-old in 2009 that really just we didn't cover, or something that you wanted to talk about in regards to your identity or coming to being a teenager at that time frame that we missed?
I mean, I think for me, the fun one that we didn't really talk about was the dichotomy between the type of music that I like and still like and what was popular, and how weird and surreal it was trying to fit in. Because being a teenager, everybody knows this, it's awkward. It's uncomfortable. You don't really understand what you're doing. But like I said earlier, I'm not a pop music fan. I don't really like any of that stuff. I've always been like, for me, in 2009, I was listening to My Chemical Romance and Blink-182. And they were not Paramore. They weren't the popular ones. So I think that was a really interesting experience, is living, quite literally living the music I was listening to, and not because I was trying to force it, but because literally they were singing about being like the outcast and stuff, and I'm over here like, yeah, because I don't understand. Grinding was really popular at dances when I was in school, and then I was like, that's just stupid. Like, this is dumb. So I think that was a interesting experience that I don't think will ever happen again in any generation, is actually having to, because so much of music overlaps now. And when I know for like you especially, it would have been everybody really was like, you liked pop or you liked whatever. And I think that for like 2009 was when digital was kind of becoming a thing. iPods were starting to be fairly popular. So it was more accessible to really lean into the kind of music that you specifically liked. And I think that was the first time that that's ever been possible, is to, you didn't necessarily have to listen to what was on the radio, because you could put music on an iPod and you could listen to that. So I think that was kind of the one thing we hadn't really discussed, was just how music changed and how different it was compared to what had come before.
Well, and you're saying a lot of these great bands that I also listened to some of them. I was never a My Chemical Romance person, but I listened to Paramore and all that. I like Paramore a bunch, and Blink-182. But yeah, this time frame in 2009, if you look at the top 20 hits of 2009, almost every single one of them is a pop star. Pop, yep. Pop, 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 pop. And like, even there are ones that still are around today, big time.
And I just think it's kind of an interesting part of that time period of like 2009, where that was the first time digital music was a thing, was accessible. So it's also about the time I think like the top 40 really doesn't matter as much anymore, because you can't categorize what the top 40 is anymore, because who knows. But I think that was just kind of fun, because it would always be like they would play. I think the closest they ever got to the kind of music that I personally listened to was like Kings of Leon, whatever they are, and Muse and stuff. They got a little close, and those would be at like prom and things, but most of it was like pop and hip hop and dance music and stuff, and I've just never listened to it. So that was a fun experience, getting to listen to the music that I like and seeing how everybody else was leaning so heavily into pop and stuff. And that was quite an entertaining experience. And I'm sad that it's really only me and the people around my age that ever got to experience it. That's just us.
I think that was a big thing. I mean, you know, and like I said, the reason I do this podcast is because I want to see at 14 what everybody's into, and not everybody's into pop. But you look at the names on this list of the 2009 hits, and there's still the names on the list of the 2025 list. You know, so Lady Gaga, Taylor Swift, you know, Justin Timberlake.
Hey, All American Rejects gives you hell. I love that song. I listen to that a bunch. It's kind of crazy. Wow, I'm looking at it right. It's kind of nuts. And yeah, I think for me, again, going back to May, it's just more accessible. Is the only reason I knew about like Poker Face and stuff is because they would be played at school dances. I think that maybe is the other half. And I think that this is still true, of the fact that since music is so digital now and you can really curate, I mean, YouTube has an algorithm and Spotify has an algorithm, and it'll just show you the music that you like. I think people nowadays, and since about 2008, 2009, I think is kind of when it started, you can get stuck in a bubble where you just don't know what else is available. Looking back, it's really cool because I could listen to the music I like, but I think that hasn't been the best for music across the board, because it's kind of stifled what is out there and what people are exposed to.
I actually, just a few weeks ago, kind of forced myself to listen to some of the modern music of 2025 on Spotify, like their top playlists and things, to see if there was anything that really kind of stood out to me or that I liked. And listening to, say, I'll just say like 50, now let's say 100 songs. The ones that I didn't like, I was just fast forward past. But there were maybe about 20 songs that I liked or so. And so I would add them to a playlist. But yeah, back then you listened to what you wanted to listen to. And this was different because, like you said, no radio so much. I actually had a survey. Every once in a while I get a survey from Nielsen. And Nielsen gives these ones out to say, what did you listen to on the radio this week? And those are the easiest surveys for me to make money on because I say absolutely nothing.
Yep. I mean, I listen to Sirius XM sometimes. That's, if I listen to the radio, it's Sirius XM and that's about it. I don't really lean toward anything else. It's pretty much just Sirius XM occasionally and whatever I'm listening to on my phone, which is fine because I'm a big metalhead. So I just find the new modern metal bands and they're all really good. So I just throw them in there and start listening to them. But it's just kind of cool looking back. Like, I didn't listen to basically any of these
yep, exactly.
at all. I listened to them at school dances and occasionally when I would be hanging out with my friends like a year or two later when we started driving and they'd all be listening to it.
If it's not done by Weird Al Yankovic, I don't know a lot of modern music.
Okay, I'm a little better than that. Like, I know these songs at least and I recognize a lot of them. But not because I listened to it at all. I definitely, and I think that it's kind of a cool experience being in that time period, like I was saying, where you got to pick. I mean, that's when LimeWire became a thing and like burning. I remember going to like iTunes was really, really popular. And I remember going to the library. I know the library of all places and renting CDs
yep.
and then burning them into the computer and putting them into iTunes and then plugging in my iPod and putting them on my iPod to listen to at school.
Oh, heck
and yeah. Then I remember running the earbud through my sleeve and into my hand so I could listen to it during school.
TCA had a few different rules. They were a little stricter. You said grinding earlier, and I'm like, TCA grinding? I don't think those.
Yeah, it happened. It didn't happen a lot, but it did happen, and I thought it was crazy. It's like, what is this? but I think it was a cool. It really was. It's why I think those more pop punk bands are ones I still listen to because it was hilariously entertaining. Because you were living. I was literally. Firsthand getting to live what the artists were singing about. And I don't personally know that was ever been a thing prior to that, where you could directly feel and understand what was being sung about because it was happening to you, where it was like, oh, this is literally what's happening in my life because that I was the outcast personally. I was the outcast who didn't really like what other people liked. And I didn't like the popular stuff. I think it was an interesting thing. But I don't necessarily think it's the best for music.
The fringe is the best.
Absolutely.
So, outside of music, was there anything else that you thought about age 14 that we missed?
Nope. That's pretty much it. That covers everything that I think was kind of relevant during 2009. It's wild to look back at 2009, man.
16 years ago. It only goes downhill from here.
Well, and it's May 3rd, which means I was getting ready to be done with my freshman year of high school. This is insane, man. Wow. That was fun. I had a lot of fun. Thank you for asking me to participate. This was a really fun experience getting to like go back and look at that time period. It was just kind of fun.
Well, I've very much enjoyed this one because, like I was talking to you before we even began, is that I do this because I wasn't really, by 2009, I was well out of high school. I was 19 years out of high school at that point in time. And so the experiences that you had at 14 are very different than mine, but like you said earlier, very similar at the same time. We were ones that liked music that was a little on the outside. We were ones that liked our comic books and our movies, but that's the big thing. The reason I put age 14 for this is because we came into ourselves around this time, and many of us do. And so these are the movies and the TV shows and the pop culture that define us and who we are. That's why I bring it up.
It makes sense. One of those, this is not me. This is just an anecdote for you, really. I was talking to my first ex-girlfriend, the one I dated through high school, because we're sort of friends now. And I was talking to her and I was asking, because I was thinking back about like being autistic now and learning about like hyperfixations and stuff. I was like, this was like 2-ish years ago where I wasn't sure that I was I just hyperfixating on horror or was I actually like, was it a thing? And she told me, she's like, dude, when we were freshmen, you liked creepy things. You liked horror. I was like, huh. It did not occur to me even then that I liked it the way that I do now. So that's just kind of along with what you're talking about. Like it is crazy to think like going back to that part of my life. I'm like, damn, most of the stuff that I like stems from right about then.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's the way it is. This is why I'm showing my movies to my son, too, because there are movies from my teenagehood that are absolute bangers that are still, you know, fantastic. And he needs to see them to be a fully cultured film, you know, connoisseur.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I think that's super cool, though. But no, this was very, very fun to go back and like reflect on what life was like.
Great. Well, I'm going to go ahead and get to the outro here in just a moment. In the meantime, John, it's been a fantastic pleasure to have you on here. I've learned a lot about life in 2009. It's been great catching up with you again. Since I had you years ago at the college, and you know, again, I've mentioned that it's fun following your career and fun following your life and seeing your successes. The big thing here is that since I wasn't around I wasn't a teenager in 2009, reliving some of this stuff from a older person's point of view, but through the eyes of a teenager. So that was really appreciated, and I really loved how we got there. You're very fluent in your discussions on what happened at the time, and I like that because it's going to make it real easy to edit this episode, even though this is going to be by far my longest episode, but that's okay. That's, you know, the whole point is just to get in here, talk about stuff, enjoy the time, smile a bit, remember the old days, and go from there. So you're right on the border of where I'm cutting off the years. So 2010 is where I was planning on cutting things off. This is a great to have the more modern, more technologically advanced video games and iPods and all that.
I am glad to have been able to provide some more, I guess, I don't want to say modern, but more modern look at life then, for sure.
Yeah, I'm hoping to go back to the 70s on my next one. So
that would be funny.
Yeah, so I think I've got one for 74 if I remember correctly. Oh. Which will be interesting because I was 3 in 74, so
oh wow, that's, you sure that person's going to even be able to operate the computer properly?
we'll see. So John, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate your time here. I'm going to jump right into the outro, and if you stick around afterwards, we'll have a little bit of chat and be done.
All right, sounds good. I'll be here.
So, cowabunga, time travelers, that's going to do it for this ride in the Tubular Time Machine. Thanks for cruising back through the raddest years with us. We hope you had as much fun as we did cranking up the nostalgia, reliving those gnarly tunes, iconic movies, epic video games, and all the pop culture goodness that made growing up totally awesome. Major shout out and mondo thanks to my weekly co-host for another righteous trip down memory lane. Your stories and vibes made this retro journey even more bodacious. Want to keep the party going? Hit us up on social media. We're talking Facebook, Instagram, maybe even a little MySpace just for the LOLs. And don't forget to cruise over to tubulartimemachine.com where you can catch past episodes, send us your memories, or suggest a year you want to fire up in the flux capacitor for next time. And hey, if you're digging the ride and want to help us keep this retro machine rolling, head over to buymeacoffee.com/MrRaz. Your support helps fuel future episodes and keep the good vibes alive. Until next time, keep your mixtapes fresh, your VHS rewound, and your vibes totally tubular. Catch you on the flip side, dude and dudettes.
Hey there, dude and dudettes. It's time to rewind from neon nights to that vintage vibe. Mixtapes, arcades, butterfly clips. We're cruising the past with totally rad tips.